This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 188. This podcast is brought to you by Generation UCAN, the revolutionary new way for runners to fuel. UCAN keeps your blood sugar stable and allows your body to burn fat. Generation UCAN, there's sugar and then there's science. Use the promo code MTA Montana, all spelled out, to save 15% on your order. That's promo code MTA MONTANA.
Hello and welcome to the MTA podcast, where it's all about empowering you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we recap the Madison and Big Sky marathons in beautiful Montana. Plus, Angie answers a listener question about living low and training high, how to prepare for running at altitude. And just a reminder, you can find out how to join our private academy training group when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. Well, the Olympics are taking place at the time of this recording, and the women's marathon was a fun sight to behold. Of course, it was really cool that we got to speak with Shalane Flanagan on our last episode. So, Angie, give us a quick rundown of the women's Olympic marathon distance. Probably by the time some people are hearing this, the Olympics is over, but anyway.
That's okay. Yes, Jemima Sungong of Kenya won the gold medal in 2 hours, 24 minutes, and 4 seconds. Eunice Kirwa of Bahrain took silver in 2 hours, 24 minutes, and 13 seconds. And Mari Dibaba of Ethiopia got the bronze medal in 2 hours, 24 minutes, and 30 seconds. And of course, we'd like to give a special shout out to Shalane Flanagan. She was 6th overall and the top American with a time of 2 hours, 25 minutes, and 26 seconds. And of course, we'll be looking forward to watching the U.S. men during the men's marathon on Sunday, the 21st, coming up here.
But you know who else is really fun to watch is Mo Farah from Great Britain.
I don't believe he's running the marathon, though.
I know, I'm just saying, in the 10K distance.
Yes. Yeah. He won the 10K and he actually recovered from a fall early on and he won in 27 minutes and 5 seconds. U.S. runner Galen Rupp was 5th overall. I hope he'd left enough gas in the tank to run the marathon well. Other exciting things was that Molly Huddle of the U.S. set a new American record in 30 minutes, 13 seconds during the women's 10K. She was 6th overall. But the first place winner there was Almaz Ayana of Ethiopia. She wins with a new world record time of 29 minutes, 17 seconds. And this is the first time that the women's 10K record has fallen in 23 years. So it was a very exciting race to watch. And of course, there's been a ton of track and field events going on, all very exciting to watch. But since we focus mostly on long distance, those are the ones we're highlighting on this episode.
I don't think I've watched so much TV in my life.
Yeah, we never watch TV. In these last week and a half, we've been pretty much glued to the Olympics in all of our free time.
Parked right in front of the TV and not feeling bad about it.
That's right. I have not been getting to bed at a decent time lately either. I was up biting my nails for the women's beach volleyball match last night. I finally just had to tear myself away to go to bed because I was so stressed about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm sitting here all stressed out and I should be sleeping, so... Anyway, sometimes I have maturity, sometimes not.
And of course, it's normal to root for the country that you come from, but Angie, I've also found you rooting for other athletes like Usain Bolt. For some reason, you always want him to win.
I just think he has such a neat story, and of course, he's the veteran coming back and trying to stay on top of the game with all these younger athletes out there. Yeah, and I think the neat thing about the Olympics is they often highlight athletes' personal stories, kind of go behind the scenes, and so it really makes you more attached to them. And yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm always happy when someone from the United States wins, but I love watching athletes from all over the world compete and just giving their best out there, sometimes coming away with a medal, sometimes not, but the Olympics are wonderful.
I agree. I just love the way that it brings the world together and all the great stories that come out of it. Well, we also want to give a couple quick shout-outs to some people in our community.
That's right. We'd like to say congratulations to Debbie. She got 2nd in her age group at the Biggest Loser Half Marathon in Chicago on a very hot and humid day. So great effort to her. This note is from Academy member Bradley. He says, the Adelaide Marathon is done, and my number one fan, my small son, was waiting for me again. I'm 5 weeks out from my goal race, but I'm feeling good, so I pushed it and finally went sub 4. 3 hours, 57 minutes, and change. I'm so excited.
Well, that is exciting, that first time that you can go sub 4 in the marathon. I remember it happened to me a long time ago. My times of late have not been that great.
That's okay. Just keep running.
Just keep running. That's right.
This next note comes from Mike. He says, hey guys, I just got your 2-hour half marathon training plan. I've run 2 halves this year and hit a bump with a cranky calf muscle, but I'm back at it. Here's the interesting part of my story. On December 18th of last year, I had the middle lobe of my right lung removed. I've recovered well, and the surgeon gave me his blessing to get going. The sky's the limit. I was re-listening to one of your podcasts last night. It was talking about why we run. After having part of one lung removed, I decided that I needed to do something with the chance that I've been given. So I run for all the people with lung problems who fight to get through the day. I run to raise awareness about lung disease. And that comes from Mike.
Well, thank you, Mike, for sharing that story with us. And I love the way that he's found perspective after what he's gone through and been able to channel it into his running. And now probably it's firmed up his identity as a runner even more now because he's just thankful that he can do it.
Exactly. This next note comes from Dawn, an Academy member. She says, I want to thank you for the podcast on slower runners. It means the world to me to hear that it's okay to be a back of the pack runner, especially today, my first day back running after a week and a half of resting my ankles. I get sick and injured a lot. I was born in an area sprayed with Agent Orange. I've had doctors literally tell me they don't know why I black out randomly. I bump against a wall. I get a shoulder injury for a year. The list goes on, and I've gleefully used it as an excuse not to take care of my health for years. This year, I started slowly running, and I love the ability to get into my head for an hour and just feel my body work. I know I'm getting healthy, but I'm slow and not consistent, and I'm afraid I'm not a runner, so I pushed myself and injured my ankles. But listening to this podcast is like getting permission to be slow, to enjoy the run, and not worry. My goal is to run a half marathon this year and a marathon next year, and to keep running. A secondary goal is to be able to do it without getting more running injuries. So no more excuses from me. Slow and steady wins this race. And that's from Academy member Don.
Well, thank you, Don, for sending that message in. And folks, if you want to go back and listen to that episode about issues that slower runners face, it is episode 144. You can still find it on our website or in iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from. But yeah, what an amazing story she has. And I think, you know, addressing this issue that it's okay to run slow. I mean, there are plenty of people that, you know, speed walk even a marathon. The marathon we're going to talk about today on this episode, there's plenty of people that started really early, like they got a permission to get on the course early just because it's going to take them so long to finish. Or people that just walked right from the very beginning, but that's what they do. And that's they found their groove and that's it.
That's right. Okay, we've got one final note here, and it says, hello, I'm Dong-hoong from South Korea. I want to thank you for making this great podcast. I listen to MTA podcasts whenever I run long distance, and it helps me improve both running and English listening skills. Since English is my second language, sometimes it's difficult to understand what you're saying, but I can always focus on the show because running is my favorite topic. My dream is to run the Boston Marathon, and I believe that you guys can make my dream come true someday. Running is cool, and running with MTA is super cool.
That I don't think we've ever been called super cool. I like
no,
it.
No, that's awesome.
No, but hearing that he listens also to improve his English skills, that
makes me a little nervous, actually.
Yeah, it makes me think about how I need to articulate better.
Right.
I apologize to any people out there who, you know, English might be your second language, and sometimes you have to really try to decipher what we're saying.
English is my only language, and sometimes I don't do a very good job with it either.
And this is after my skillful editing.
Right.
No, but thanks for that note, Dong-hoon, and keep up the great work. Well, on this episode, we're going to bring you one of our world-famous race recaps. This time, we're going to take you to Montana, where Angie's from. We were just recently there on a long summer trip out west and kind of found this race, actually these two races, at the last minute and signed up. It's called the Greater Yellowstone Race Series, and their tagline is, these ain't no pansy-ass big city races.
Hey,
All right, Angie, you ready to recap this beast?
Of course. Actually, there's some time has elapsed since we ran this race. We've done other podcast episodes in between this recap. I know several people have been asking me about it, when we're going to get it out. So better late than never, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it hasn't quite been a month yet, but maybe like 3 weeks since we ran this, right?
So a little bit of amnesia has set in, which is probably a good thing.
So it was probably harder than what you recollect.
Exactly. It all seems wonderful now.
Well, it's going to be good because we're going to talk about how to get through a tough race, how to run the last minute race, how to run at altitude, overcoming adversities of that sort. So yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff in here for people to glean.
Yes. So we were on our summer trip and on our way home. And of course, we were kind of thinking, well, maybe we could find a race to do. Trevor hadn't done one this summer. So he found the Greater Yellowstone Race Series in Montana. And you decided you were going to sign up for a half marathon. And then, of course, I thought, well, I should do a race too. And they just happened to have these back-to-back races. So I ran the 9th Annual Madison Marathon, which the nearest town was Ennis, Montana, and it took place on July 23rd, 2016, and it is billed as the highest road marathon on planet Earth. And it started back in 2008. Apparently, they've brought in runners from over 40 states and several countries through the years, and they have a 200-runner capacity due to the U.S. Forest Service policy of the number of runners that can be on public land, because it's basically run in the Gravelly Mountain Range and in the Beaverhead Deer Lodge National Forest, which is very pristine and beautiful up there.
This is rugged country, folks. It's north of Yellowstone National Park. It's Montana living at its finest. Tons of people come there just to fly fish. It's about an hour south of Bozeman, which is one of the nicest places in Montana to live, in many people's opinions. And like Angie said, people from other countries come in. There was a guy from France who came to run this race this year that I heard about, because he was kind of stranded in Bozeman, needed a ride.
Yes, we found out about that later. We'd been visiting my brother and family in Bozeman, actually, the previous days. And so we really enjoyed the beautiful drive from Bozeman to Ennis, Montana. And we had found a nice spot for our camper at an RV park. It had a gorgeous view of the mountains. So that was really nice.
With terrible internet.
That was pretty much par for the course. Yes. Most campgrounds we stayed at, unfortunately.
It's hard to conduct business online when you have a horrible internet connection all summer, but we survived.
Yes, people were patient with us, and we managed to keep moving forward, hopefully.
First world problems.
Exactly.
So, Angie, having grown up in Montana, if people that haven't been there, maybe folks that listen to our show that are not, you know, from the U.S., how would you describe the state? What does it exude?
Well, there's more cows than people there.
That is true.
Which is a good thing.
Less than a million people.
Actually, I think over a million people now.
Okay. It's
just slightly over a million people. And I believe it is the fourth largest state as far as landmass goes. I suppose it would be Alaska, Texas, California, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's got tons of room. And there's some counties where it's like one person per mile in the county.
Yeah, and then there's obviously larger population centers. And I think as far as the views there, it has some diversity to it. I mean, there's a lot of kind of flat grasslands. There's very, very rugged mountains there, lakes, you know, obviously no ocean. So we're limited, yes, as far as the beachfront property. But
we do get to see Canada, though.
Yes, we do. It is known as Big Sky Country. And I don't know what it is about Montana, but just when you are there, it feels like the sky is just huge and beautiful.
Yes, it just fills the whole frame in a picture.
It is. It's hard to describe. And of course, I'm biased, having been raised in Montana. I just get back there and I feel like I've come home. It's like, ah, yes, this is where I should be living.
Well, the mountains are gorgeous. And I think the mountains tend to have an effect on people who grow up near the mountains. And it's probably the same with the ocean. It's just something draws you to it.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. Now, we've already done a marathon in Montana before. So as far as my 50-state goal, I didn't have this state to check off again. But it's no problem doing two a state. And we actually registered for this race about 2 weeks prior. And registration was around $100 for the marathon. So it wasn't very cheap, I didn't think, as far as, you know, the overall cost and for what you got. But they did send out very informative pre-race emails, and they had a detailed pre-race information packet available to download from their website. And so I started to read through it and freak out a little bit about some of the information in there.
It was pretty comical, actually.
Yeah, I mean, they had to include this part that the U.S. Forest Service made them put in there because in the Gravelly Mountain Range, there are sheep ranchers who graze sheep up there, and they have these Great Pyrenees sheepdogs who basically guard the flock. And apparently they're not socialized to people, mm-hmm. and they're very protective of their sheep. And so there was a whole section on what to do if you see one of these dogs, if they approach you. And we talked about a little bit on a previous podcast how you're supposed to stand still, not run, and say in a commanding voice, go to the sheep. So I'm like practicing this, you know, pre-race. And then we're in Bozeman and talking to my brother, and he was wanting to know where it was. And I told him the Gravelly Mountain Range. He's like, oh, that's where they release all the problem grizzly bears. He's like, I don't even hunt in some areas of that range. I'm like, thanks for telling me that. You should have waited until post-race when I survived happily.
And he would know because he's worked for the BLM before.
He has, and he does a lot of hunting as well. So I'm like, oh, that was something I didn't need to worry about.
All but, the problem grizzly bears.
But since you hear the sound of my voice, you know that there were no grizzly bear run-ins.
That's true. But I do want to hear what it would have sounded like if you needed to use your go-to-the-sheep voice. So give us your best stern go-to-the-sheep voice. Are you ready for this, folks?
I don't want to.
I can't get you to do it.
No, I'm sorry. I don't perform on command.
I know. I should have known that after all these years of marriage. Sorry, folks. Sorry to let you down.
That's okay. I feel like I practiced it enough. And that now that I didn't need it, it feels like a little bit of a letdown. But that's okay.
Because you didn't see any of those dogs.
I didn't see any dogs.
Or sheep or grizzly bears.
No, even though I kept my eyes peeled, believe me. I'm like, what is that speck in the distance? Oh, it's a cow. Okay. So the race director is Sam Korsmo, and he was assisted by his son. I thought it was interesting that they split their time between living in China and Montana.
Wow.
Apparently, they bring over a large group of kind of exchange students for the summer from China. So that was really interesting. You might have saw some of the volunteers.
I did.
From China. So yes. That was pretty cool.
That makes sense now.
It does. The packet pickup was held Friday before the race in the late afternoon at the Lions Club Park in Ennis. And they had a pre-race dinner that evening. We didn't take part in it. We were too busy trying to get our camp spot and get settled down for the night. So it was really quick and easy to get your race bib and short sleeve cotton race t-shirt from packet pickup. In fact, you and I were able to get both of our stuff in the space of like 5 minutes probably.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also kind of disconcerting when we were pulling into Ennis and there were fires raging in the mountain range. And we're thinking, you know, how's this going to affect the race tomorrow? And because, I mean, that could be really dangerous.
Yes. Yeah. I was wondering if they would have to reroute it or, you know, cancel it. But fortunately, it seemed to be at enough of a distance from where we were that smoke didn't really seem to be a problem either.
So let's talk about race morning. Angie, here you are getting up early to...
In our tiny camper.
Yeah. How did you sleep the night before and how did you prepare?
Well, I've set everything out the night before. You know, my clothes, pinned my bib on, got everything ready. I had my hydration packed with some stuff that I wanted during the race. So on Saturday, I had to get up early, but it was just basically to get dressed and gather my race gear. And then you took me to the shuttle bus location at 5 a.m. So it was an early morning. And from that location where we got on the bus, it was an hour and a half bus ride on these extremely rough gravel roads to Clover Meadows in the Gravelly Mountain Range where we were able to get off the bus and use the bathroom. It was kind of like the halfway point of the race and the finish line for the half marathon there. So it was kind of a staging point of sorts. Some people actually camped in Clover Meadow for the night. So you could do that and avoid the long bus ride. Then after using the bathroom, we got back on the buses for another 30 minutes up to the starting line. And it was like these washboard gravel roads, basically.
Oh, I hate roads,
you know,
like that.
And it's one of those old yellow school buses, and you're just like rattling around, your teeth are knocking together. But despite all that, it was a very, very beautiful drive. We're basically driving up into the mountains, got to see the sun rise over the mountains, saw lots of deer, antelope, other wildlife. So that was enjoyable. And then they let us runners off the bus near the base of Black Butte Mountain. And unfortunately, there's only two porta pots up there for approximately 100 runners doing both the half and the full. So the lines were long, to say the least.
Well, it's so hard to get a porta potty up there, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you mentioned earlier they had an early start time for those marathoners who had normal finish times over 6 hours. Since we were going to be so high up in the mountains and a challenging course, they wanted to make it a little bit easier for those who took longer to finish. For the rest of us, the starting time was at 8:30 in the morning. And one cool thing is they got the race going with the sound of a gong.
So did you think, get it on, bang a gong?
No, because I hate that song and I never want to invite it to my head.
Get it on, bang a gong. I'm going to play that song on this episode in honor of you, honey, in this race.
Well, good thing I never listened to the episodes.
It's just true. She never listens to the finished product.
I don't.
She uses her time much more efficiently than listening to herself. Going back to the bus ride, it was like a 2-hour bus ride on washed out roads in this old bus. By the time you got back from this race and you had to ride the bus again, you know, back, you're like, I think the bus ride was harder than the marathon.
Yeah, it was kind of a long sit. But after the race, I was very happy just to be off my feet. So
that's true.
It didn't seem quite as long, I suppose.
Okay, so let's talk about the course of the Madison Marathon.
Well, the starting line was at 9,250 feet above sea level. And here's a little blip of what they said in the pre-race info. They said, it's a fact that you're almost guaranteed to get a personal worst time because of the high elevation and the 4 to 5 mile uphills and downhills that never dip below 8,500 feet.
They call it a PW, personal worst.
Yes, that was a new one for me. So they tell you up front, do not expect to get anywhere near your normal marathon time. But fortunately, they had no official time limit. So that was pretty nice. They ran buses from the finish back to the town of Ennis in about 2-hour intervals. And then the race director was going to take the final finishers down at 6 p.m. So I guess it would have been like a 9.5-hour time limit. So very generous. They really wanted to work with people. Anyone who wanted to do the race, they were willing to work with you. And so very, very helpful, friendly people there. Now, even though this was technically a road marathon, the road, I put quotation marks around it, was basically gravel and dirt, frequent larger rocks and potholes. It was called Gravelly Range Road. And there was about a total of 3,000 feet of elevation gain for the marathon. So the course went from the starting line to that Clover Meadows area, which was the finish for the half marathon. And that was the halfway point for us marathoners. Then we had a 6.5 mile out and back from that spot. So, you know, anytime you have to pass the finish line, it's like, oh,
why didn't I do the half?
This is fun. I get to do more. And another kind of challenging part was after the halfway point, there was traffic from vehicles on the road who were leaving the half marathon.
Right.
Which made everything very dusty. So I felt like I was just caked in dust by the time I was done.
Now, since these ain't no pansy-ass races, you would expect that there's not very many comforts provided. So what were the aid stations actually like?
Yes, they advertised that this was a limited support race, and it was very true. Their aid stations were about every 3+ miles apart, and not all of them were manned with volunteers, which means it may just be a cooler of water and cups. A couple of them did have sports drink. And there were some volunteers out there, and they were very friendly and helpful and encouraging. But there weren't any spectators except at the midway point at the Clover Meadows area. In the race packet, it said, we encourage runners to carry their own timing devices, water bottles, and food gels as needed. Be aware and prepared, all in caps. This is a high-altitude race.
I mean, if something would have happened to a runner out there, I mean, how long would it take for help to get there anyway? 2 hours.
You know? Yeah, I know. If you really needed medical support.
I'm sure they probably had at least one person that was trained in CPR or something out there on the course.
Yeah, I mean, you could have checked in at an aid station and they would have radioed. They had all had handheld radios. So I'm sure they would have gotten help there as quickly as possible. There was a lot of long, lonely stretches.
Probably especially after the half marathon point, right?
Right.
So here's Angie running on this dirt road by herself, long, lonely stretch. Hardly anyone knows where she is.
Scanning the horizon for sheepdog and grizzly bears.
Yes. Rabid bears on the prowl. I'm glad you survived, Angie.
Me too.
You're a tough Montana girl.
I don't let my fears hold me back, or I try not to. For my fuel, I did my usual pre-race you can, and I wore my hydration pack filled with water. And then I also carried a small bottle with 2 servings of Yucan in it. And I also had 2 Yucan snack bars for my fuel.
Oh, you're all set then.
Yeah, and that worked. That worked really well.
We appreciate Yucan sponsoring this episode. And we recently heard from a lady who was wondering about some stomach issues she was having after her 15-miler. And she's training for her first marathon. And to me, it kind of sounded like the fueling she was doing was kind of hit and miss, kind of haphazard, which is normal in the beginning because, you know, this is all new territory. And that's one of the big puzzles to figure out is what should I eat when I'm out on a long run? How much do I eat? How many calories do I need? So, Angie, what did you tell her?
Well, I told her that my initial thought was that her stomach may be reacting badly to the fuel that she was using. Some of the more simple sugar product fuels can cause dumping syndrome, resulting in diarrhea, and which was what she was going through. So I told her she basically might want to consider trying a different type of fuel to see if that settles in her system better. And of course, I was so happy to find Generation Yucan because it's helped keep my stomach happy and my energy level stable for long runs and races for several years now.
So if you want to give Yucan a try, we usually recommend getting their multi-flavor pack. And so you just kind of test out which flavor works the best for your stomach. And of course, you can save 15% off when you use the code MTAMONTANA. And of course, that's all spelled out, MTAMONTANA. So how did you feel that your race went overall? I mean, you weren't necessarily trained up for this because it was a last minute race, but how did you do?
Well, I definitely had low expectations about my finish time and just really approached it feeling pretty laid back because I knew the elevation and hills would take a lot out of me, but I really wasn't prepared for how beautiful the course was. Mm. I mean, it was tough. There were nonstop hills sometimes it felt like, but it was seriously the most gorgeous race that I've ever run.
Really?
And I've run some beautiful races before.
So you think this was more gorgeous than the Leadville Trail Marathon?
I do, because the starting line and most of the race was above the tree line, and it offered panoramic views,
yeah,
mountain views the whole time. And I could see literally for 100 miles in all directions. And there were patches of snow up there, green grassy meadows, wildflowers in bloom. Literally, like the first mile, I was stopping to take pictures. And I finally, after like mile 10, I had to like stop myself and like, okay, only one picture per mile. Because I could have just like stood by the side of this road and like stared for half an hour. It was just gorgeous.
We should say also this is called the Madison Marathon because the Madison River flows through the valley there. And when I ran my race the next day, the sun was shining on the river and just looked like this ribbon of silver running through the valley. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was literally breathtaking, not only the elevation, but also the views. The weather started out really nice. It was around 50 degrees. It climbed to about the mid-70s by the afternoon, but there was a nice cross breeze, which kept me feeling fairly cool, and I was thankful to be wearing my trail shoes and gaiters because they kept out some of the dirt and rocks that always try to work their way in. At the halfway point, I stopped to use the bathroom, and they had this little cooler there with beer in it. And I was like, oh, that sounds so good, because I was pretty hot at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, I should just wait till after the race. But I was like, no, I've learned my lesson. Anytime I like think I'm going to wait till after the race, there's never any left.
Yes.
So I'm like, I don't care how this looks. I took off from the halfway point with my can of beer and I drank it over the next 2 miles. It was very refreshing.
That's the first time you've ran drinking a beer.
Well, like a whole beer. The 50K I did earlier in the summer at the Shadow of the Giants 50K, there was beer at an aid station in a cup, and so I had some there. So it's not like it's the first time I ever had alcohol while running, but this was the first time I drank a whole can. And it was a very good decision, let me just tell you that. It helped me power through some tough climbs.
Wow.
That were coming up. So that was awesome.
I hope I can drink a beer at the Berlin Marathon, like one of those huge steins. Maybe at mile 20, they'll just have a stein station.
I doubt it.
Oh, man, that'd be so awesome.
We'll have to save our celebration for afterward.
Of course, then we'd have to have extra porta potties after that point, too.
Yeah, definitely.
After the sign station.
Yes, this marathon only had 4 porta pots along the entire thing. So, I mean, there's plenty of woods that you could go into if you wanted to risk the bears.
It was definitely a bare bones race series. I mean, the marathon the next day, I just did the half. And when we got to the finish line of the half marathon, there was a bus, there was some cones, you know, there were some people there to give you your medal and write down your time. I don't remember seeing a porta pot. And we had to wait like an hour for enough people to accumulate so we can ride the bus back. I didn't even think about it because I didn't have to go. But looking back on it now, some people could have been very uncomfortable about that.
Yeah. And like they said in all the pre-race information, that it was a lightly supported race. And so if you like to be pampered during your events, you definitely don't want to do these because the course was rough and, you know, there wasn't a lot of support of the aid stations or porta pots or food or anything.
So. Oh, there wasn't any food at my race or beer.
Well, at my race.
Unless I missed it, which is not like me. It's not like me to miss that.
There were quite a few marathon maniacs and 50 staters out on the course. In fact, I saw Larry Macon, who has done reportedly over 1,600 marathons, basically does like 3 marathons a weekend or something. Mm-hmm. And there were a few hardy souls who were doing their first marathon. So kudos to them.
We don't typically recommend such a hard course for your first marathon.
But they were Montana natives, so I figured.
They're used to roughing it, yeah.
So for the Madison Marathon, there were a total of 57 people who did the full marathon and 46 who did the half marathon. The men's winner was Matt Holton, 38 years old of Hawaii, with a finish time of 3 hours, 54 minutes, and 30 seconds. The female winner was Linda Andros Clay, 40 years old of Bozeman, Montana, with a time of 4 hours and 28 minutes, 57 seconds. My finish time was 5 hours and 48 minutes, and this was my 47th marathon. At our finish line, the waiting runners and volunteers were really good about cheering people on as they came in, and they gave out a really nice medal. So that's something in the favor of the race, for sure. And the food was very scant at the finish line. For us, there was just water and a granola bar by the time I arrived. And I changed really quick because they had buses running at 2-hour increments. And so I crossed the finish line at like 2:20, and the next bus was leaving at 2:30. So I quickly changed and basically just had time to like flag down the bus, jump on the bus, and get ready for another hour and a half bone-rattling ride down the mountain. Fortunately, I had an Epic bar and some pistachios in my gear check bag that I was able to eat on the bus ride back. So I clearly did not starve to death.
You got back sooner than I expected you.
Yeah, I was thinking I wouldn't make that earlier bus, but the last 5 miles, I was like, just keep moving forward, make that bus, because I didn't want to get there and then have to wait another 2 hours to get back down the mountain. So,
did you feel like you could feel the effects of the elevation like you have in past races?
I do. I mean, I was more short of breath, but honestly, I walked up all the hills. And there were a lot of them. And then I just ran any flat sections and downhills at a very slow, conservative pace. So I didn't feel like I pushed myself just because there was no reason to. And I didn't want to, you know, have a miserable experience at that altitude.
So how did you feel the next couple days after the marathon?
Actually, I felt pretty good. I was expecting way more quad soreness, but I mean, you know, a little bit of stiffness and soreness, but it was one of the easier marathons to recover from, probably because I did so much walking throughout.
Nice. Well, congrats on finishing your 47th marathon.
Thank you.
So the next day, as we've been saying, there was another race put on by this series, the Greater Yellowstone Race Series. And they call it the Big Sky Marathon and Half. And this is actually a race that they've been doing for 2 years now and is called, quote, the second longest downhill road marathon on planet Earth. I'm not sure how they verify that, but nevertheless, I signed up for the half. Actually, the course covers part of the Madison Marathon, so perhaps, Angie, you and I don't know for certain, but we're running on the same stretch of road at times.
Exactly.
I'll walk through really quick my race experience, and I'll do it in the style that Angie does. So first I'll talk about the pre-race. And the key word that I'm going to use, and the key word I've figured out for our whole summer, is the word fumble. Angie just keeps using that word. So I'm like, that's the word of the summer, fumble.
Fumble with your credit card.
Yeah.
Fumble with your phone.
Yeah, like we'd be at a restaurant and we'll be anxious to leave, right, and get the bill and pay. So Angie says, why don't you go ahead and get your credit card out before she comes, so you're not like fumbling around trying to, you know, before she leaves the table. And what else was I fumbling? Oh, I'm trying to fumble with my phone while it's ringing and get it out of my pocket. Yeah, anyways, it's just the word keeps coming up. So pre-race, when I was to go get my packet, I fumbled around and couldn't figure out what table to go to because there were several little lines, and I was trying to explain who I was and which race I was running. And there was some guy from Australia who was helping me, and he and I, you know, Australians are not that hard to understand, but this particular one was.
Maybe you were hard to understand. Maybe. You're fumbling your words.
I was fumbling. We weren't connecting. But it turns out that I was supposed to pick my packet up the next day. So I was trying to do it a day early because I didn't really want to do it the next day. So I kind of knew that, but it worked out, and I got after fumbling around and then trying to get out of this tiny parking lot with our huge camper, which involved like a 27-point turn. Yeah, we got out of there. And then race morning, I got up early in the morning and we hopped in the car and you took me to where the bus was going to leave. And we fumbled around as we tried to figure out exactly where the bus was leaving from, because there wasn't very clear communication. It was either at this gas station or it was at the finish line, which is at this park. And there were runners in both areas looking for the bus. And finally, it looked like I saw one of the race organizers. And he really didn't know. He had to, like, call somebody. So there was a lot of fumbling going on. The bus ride was fine. I got to talk to some very interesting people. There was a lady there who is a marathon maniac, and she had run the marathon the day before. But this lady is trying to run 130 marathons this year.
Wow. That's mind-blowing.
But this lady, it seemed like she had been to every marathon in the United States that I could think of.
Wow.
Every single one that you and I have been to, she'd been there
done
too.
It.
There's this mainly marathon race series that they specialize in doing weekend races kind of back-to-back. And she's going to do every mainly marathon race this calendar year. Interesting lady. I was like, how do you afford to do this?
Right.
She's like, basically, I retired early in life. I stay at cheap hotels and I don't eat.
And she didn't have kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the main thing. So if you want to save money, don't have kids.
We're like, oh, too late for us.
That's where the money's going. Man. No, it's worth it. It's definitely worth it. So we got off the bus and we waited around for a while and they banged the gong and we got it on and we started running downhill. And I figured out pretty quickly that there wasn't a whole lot of people doing this, and my chances of finishing near the front of the pack were pretty good, so I started putting more effort in trying to pass people and being competitive with myself. As far as the course goes, it was mostly downhill, and I really loved to open it up on the downhills, and I found myself running pretty hard and almost like pushing that edge. When you run downhill, we're like, you probably shouldn't run any faster. You could topple, face first into the ground.
Right.
But you let gravity kind of pull you the way that it wants to pull you and just kind of hope your legs keep up with the momentum.
Wow. Good race strategy there.
Yeah. You call that a strategy? No, I really love running downhill. I knew that I was going to suffer for it the next day. Also, did you notice all the cattle guards we had to cross?
Yes, there were a lot of them, and I had to walk across them. I knew I'd probably
fumble
and get my foot stuck and break my ankle or something otherwise.
Oh, it's definitely possible. I mean, I ran across a couple of those at full speed, and then I thought, well, this is kind of sketchy. I mean, it's not – the bars in these things are pretty wide apart, so I started walking across them. As far as aid stations go, at my half marathon, there were a couple stops with water coolers and cups. That's all I can remember. In my quest to pass as many people as possible, it was interesting that some runners and I just kept leapfrogging each other. So I'd pass them usually on the downhills, and then they'd pass me on the uphills. One thing I remember is there was a father and son, and I could tell the dad was an experienced runner and probably would have no problem, running an hour 30 half marathon or something, maybe even faster. But he had his 13-year-old son with him, and they were moving along at a really good pace. They actually finished before I did. I hardly ever saw him take any walk breaks, and I felt like that was really neat for a 13-year-old kid to run such a good time.
Yeah, I love to see that.
And it was definitely tempting to stop and take more pictures because the course was beautiful. Every direction, it was just a photograph wanting to be taken, And I did have to stop one time to let cattle cross in front of me. So I got down to the finish line, and I felt pretty tired. I mean, I was really pushing it, trying to pass certain people and to really give it all I had. And I can't say that I was in that greatest shape for this race, having been kind of sedentary this summer with a lot of traveling and eating out and
sporadic running,
unlike Angie. But I was pretty sore by the time I finished, and it was hard not to walk during that last mile, which is Which is dumb. You know, you only got 1 mile left. You might as well just gut it out and run to the finish line. You're not doing yourself any favor by prolonging the misery. Do you ever walk during the last mile of a race?
You know, at one point in my life, I used to think, why would anyone walk in the last mile? But there have been some races that, yes, I was walking that last mile and I could barely bring it up to a run, you know, until the finish line was in sight. It's like, okay, let's put on the gas here.
That makes me feel better. So happy to be across the finish line, and I got a nice medal. First, they gave me the wrong one. They gave me last year's medal.
which collect them all.
They noticed and corrected, so that was fun. That was cool. And then I immediately went to the water cooler to fill up my little water bottle because I was, for the last couple miles, I was out of water. But I noticed the water cooler was almost empty.
Oh, no.
And that was it. There was no more water, and we're kind of in the middle of nowhere, just with a bus and a couple of race organizers, and we're you know, good ways from town. So I asked one of the staff, I'm like, you guys have any more water? And she said, no, we'll send somebody to get some more.
And soon, please.
Yeah. So I'd finished all the water that I took, and I didn't want to take any more because there were more runners coming in all the time and they're going to need water. So
it was part of a strategy. No water, no porta pot. Just hand in hand, right?
Yeah. Oh, now it makes sense. Just in case you ever had, you know, the passing thought, this is kind of like a Pansy-ass Big City race. They wanted to squelch that thought immediately by taking away any last vestige of comfort.
You don't get water or a porta pot or any post-race food.
It's kind of hot on this bus. Can I take the window down? No. This ain't no Pansy-ass Big City bus.
That's right.
So anyway, they finally brought some more water, and one of the race organizers, volunteers, I don't know who she was cheering people on as they crossed the finish line. She was definitely not short on enthusiasm, and I had to walk by this lady to get my medal, and she yelled so loud that same moment as I was walking by, I almost made my ears ring. So next time I walked by her, I made this huge berth around her because she was really cheering people on. And one runner is coming across the finish line. They must have known each other. And this lady starts taking off running alongside this runner, but the runner's on the road and this cheerleader lady's on the grass, and the grass is kind of rough and uneven and there's gopher holes. And she's just running at a full sprint and trips and does a scorpion when she hits the ground. You know what a scorpion is? That's when your legs fly up behind you and like hit the back of your head.
Oh.
I mean, it was an epic fall.
Ouch.
And she had this expensive camera around her neck. She just boom, hit it, the ground. And everyone around her is like, oh, are you okay? And of course, that makes it worse when people say that.
Your humiliation is complete.
And she's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine. So she gets dusted off. And then she just sort of sat down on the grass.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, she was pretty stunned. I'll always remember that, the Big Sky Half Marathon. Thankfully, I'm happy to report that she did eventually get up and resumed her cheering.
Wow.
My official finishing time for this half marathon was 1 hour, 59 minutes, and 20 seconds. I actually finished second in my age group.
Awesome.
My age group consisted of 5 dudes.
It's okay.
But I was 13th overall out of 37 people that did the half.
Nice. How many people ran the full?
42 people ran the full Big Sky Marathon. The fastest guy finished in 4 hours, 12 minutes. The fastest woman in 3 hours, 34 minutes, and 34 seconds.
So the overall winner was a woman, huh?
It was. Her name is Becky Manville from Colorado Springs. She's 42. And I think I saw her on the course because there was this one lady who I was trying to reel in, but I never could catch up to her. And I mean, she was killing it. And then I saw her just keep going past the half finish line. I'm like, wow, she's actually doing the full at that at that pace.
That's crazy.
And then we later passed her in the bus on our way back down to Ennis, and she was still plugging along. And it was a hot day. I mean, it kind of got hot out there.
Yeah, it did.
So great displays of athleticism there at the Big Sky Marathon. And after the race, we took the boys to Virginia City, which is a historic gold mining town close to Ennis. And it's actually, at one time, it was the capital of the Montana Territory. It's kind of a touristy area now, but the buildings and everything look pretty similar to how they would have looked in the late 1800s. Actually, maybe even earlier, like 1860s.
Right.
So that does it for our race recap of the Madison and Big Sky Marathons in beautiful Montana. Now we have a question that we'd like to speak to that has to do with altitude. So for the quick tip in this episode, how to live and train low and race high. High as in altitude. So Angie, go ahead and read the question and tell us how to live low and race high.
All right. This question says, hi, Angie and Trevor. I recently found your podcast and have been so pleased and excited to listen and learn from you and your guests. I'm curious if you have any tips for training low and racing high, or suggestions for building strength and stamina to climb mountains when you live at sea level. I signed up for my first ever marathon last week, the Moab Trail Marathon, because I wanted to run a marathon on my 26th birthday that would push me way out of my comfort zone. Naturally, a trail race through canyons and desert sounded perfect. I currently live in the mountains of Southwest Virginia, which is an awesome place to train, but I will be moving to Erie, Pennsylvania at the end of August, which is pancake flat and at sea level. I plan to travel most weekends to the mountains in New York for longer runs and do some of my shorter workouts on the sandy beaches of Lake Erie. My cross-training workouts include cycling and swimming and running stadium stairs once each week and strength training twice a week. Thanks so much. And that comes from Jesse.
Jesse definitely sounds like she is being intentional in her training.
That's right. It's awesome to challenge yourself like that and take her running to the next level. And when you live at low altitude and are training for a high altitude race, you're better off focusing on quality training at low elevation if you don't have the opportunity to live or train regularly at high elevation. And anything above 5,000 feet sea level is considered high altitude. And this means that you'll have a lower concentration of oxygen per breath that you take, which makes your heart and lungs work harder to deliver the necessary oxygen to your muscles. And you'll notice that you have a higher heart and respiratory rate when you're at altitude because of this. But it sounds like Jessie is already doing a lot of things right by planning to head to the mountains for some of her long runs. And she's already including stair running and strength training in her routine. So that's great. So I just have a few other tips here to help her have a successful high altitude race. The first thing is to have realistic expectations. You're not going to be able to run your normal pace at elevation. So it's really important to listen to your body, to run by effort, and not worry about your pace. The second thing is to simulate the course the best you can. If you'll be racing on gravel or trails, dirt roads, try to find something similar in your area. Also, be sure to find some challenging hills so that you can do hill repeats, run stairs like she was talking about doing the stadium stairs, even practice slow running at a high incline on the treadmill, or even run up and down a parking garage to challenge your legs if you live in a hill-challenged area. Also consider wearing a weighted pack during your runs, especially if you'll be racing with a hydration pack. It's important to simulate that so you get used to strengthening your upper body and having that extra weight on you. The third tip would be to do lower body strength and core training each week. That's going to help you with any climbs and downhill portions of the race so that you don't come away from the race so sore that you can't sit down for 5 days. The next tip would be to eat as clean and healthy as possible in your training and in the days leading up to the race. Make sure that your iron is at the right level so your red blood cells can carry as much oxygen as possible. So eating foods high in iron and vitamin C will help with that. I also notice that I'm not as hungry at altitude. So if this is the case for you, be sure to make sure that the meals and snacks you do eat are packed with nutrients so that you have plenty of strength and energy for your race. Also, make sure to hydrate more at altitude and avoid excess caffeine and alcohol, which can make your body work harder than normal. So maybe drinking that beer in the middle of the race wasn't great for my performance, but
it's great for your psychology, though.
It sure felt good at the moment. The next tip is try to arrive 7 to 10 days before the race to allow your body to acclimate, or right before the race, like within 48 hours. It can also be beneficial to get extra sleep in the days leading up to the race so that you're feeling well rested. And of course, make sure that you've studied the things that you'll need and practiced with them during the race, things like a hydration pack, any running clothes, trail shoes, gaiters, anything that you'll need, make sure you're familiar with them. And always wear sunscreen at altitude too, because the sun is that much closer to you.
That's kind of weird that you either need to get there pretty early, like 7 to 10 days beforehand, Or don't get there early at all.
Right. Well, the earlier you can get there, the better your body can acclimate. However, if you don't have time for that, if you don't have time to be there that long in advance, it's better to get there right before so your body doesn't really know what's going on yet. And you still have, you know, a full
tank of oxygen from the lowlands.
Yes. So good luck, Jesse, with this awesome adventure that you're taking on. I think that you're training smart already, and we hope you have a great race.
And if you'd like more information on training for your marathon or half marathon or next running challenge, be sure to check us out over at marathontrainingacademy.com. We have a lot of resources over there. You can also find out how to train with us and our awesome online community when you look into the academy and all that it offers. And it's always great to hear from you. If you've got a question or comment, we've got a contact form over on our website. You can send it in to us. And if you want to see pictures from the Madison Marathon and Big Sky Marathon, you can see that when you check out the show notes to this episode. And of course, it's always great to be on this running journey with you. We're looking forward to meeting up with some of you at the Berlin Marathon. If you're going to be there, drop us a note. That's going to be coming up soon. And as always, we want to sign off by reminding you that you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.